Welcome to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. This is the place to be for stories to inspire and uplift when life doesn't go according to our plans. I'm Laura Muirhead, your host and the reigning queen of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life. I can't wait to share the plot twist stories of my guests that will inspire and uplift you when life didn't follow the plan, right here on A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast.
Hello and a warm, warm welcome to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast with the Joanna Hunter Takeover. I am taking over today. I am Joanna Hunter, spiritual life and business coach. And today it is my turn to interview our normal host, Laura Muirhead. Hi, Laura. A warm welcome to your own podcast.
Thank you so much, Joanna. And thank you for taking over, doing the takeover today. I'm so happy for this and excited for it.
I'm really, really excited to share your story with people because we've known each other now for a few years and your story just always blows me away. Like, it's a story of, you know, forget girl power. This is real woman power. And it's a story of resilience and it's a story of never giving up. And a story that has a rapid heart rate because it is up and down, up and down, up and down. And, you know, and all that you have survived through it all. So let's get into all of this because I am excited. So the first thing I want to talk about is a funny thing happened on the way to my life story of yours, which we have kind of dubbed Tales of the Fire. So tell us a little bit about Tales of the Fire.
Yeah, so, you know, I feel like there's things that happen along the way in your life that are unexpected and little plot twists. And one of the big plot twist stories in my life was my husband and I had we'd wanted to live on the water in New Jersey. And we spent a few months looking and looking. I think we looked at possibly every house that was on the market on the Jersey Shore in the area that we wanted to live in. Our realtor had been up, you know, around and around with us. And we'd looked at all these houses and we settled on this one that we really were in love with and wanted to live in. And made an offer. And it started with a challenging escrow. It took 6 months for the escrow to close. So we were, you know, and we just kept pushing through and pushing through. And it was so challenging. The seller was a little bit difficult. And anyway, finally, you know, we had moved in and we were there for 10 months. We were just, you know, feeling, you know, it does take a bit to settle into your new home and really feeling like you're there and getting your bearings of all the things. And we moved in December. So we had a really fun summer of jet skiing and boating and the kids coming and having all the water sports and all the fun. And we literally went to bed on the night before Halloween Eve. And my husband woke up for some reason. We had, you know, gorgeous water views. And so our whole bedroom was windows. So we would frequently wake up and, you know, see the moon shining in or the stars or different things, you know, would wake us up and catch our, you know, kind of catch our attention as we rolled over in the middle of the night. But this morning, my husband woke up and saw something flickering out the window. And he was like, "What is that flickering?" Well, as he groggily woke up, realized that it was a fire. It was a fire outside of our window. And then realized that it was the house on fire. And so I don't specifically remember this. And there's a faint memory, but he pushed me, "Wake up, get out of bed." I remember him, you know, sitting up and saying some curse words, and that startled me. For some reason, I grabbed my phone, was on the nightstand, and called 911 as he's, you know, kind of looking. And I also remember the shades, of course, were down, but we had, you know, blinds that were somewhat, you know, transparent. And yeah. I remember as I was calling 911 and rushing out of the bedroom, seeing flames up. And this house was three stories. So we were up on the third story, the garages, and then the main living, and then the bedrooms. And so, you know, even in that split second, that idea that the flames were up that high. So we ran downstairs, saw that the fire had started outside of the house in our screen porch. And so we didn't, at that point, we didn't have any alarms going off, no smoke detectors. The smoke luckily hadn't come into the house at that point, and the fire hadn't come in. But very quickly, as we went downstairs, the window started to break downstairs, and we had
that must have been at that point. Do you remember feeling like absolutely terrified, or what was going through, or were you just in a kind of, sometimes some people, when you're in a situation like that, you go through this like really weird thing of like, right, it's just very military, like, let's do just this and this. Or are you absolutely freaking out and thinking, oh my God, there's a possibility we might die in this house?
I was confused. I was so confused because the you know, where did this fire start? That's kind of where my brain went. Why are we on fire?
Okay.
And so I looked at the, you know, by then I was standing in the kitchen, you know, on the phone, and I looked at the stove, you know, thinking, did we leave the stove on? Well, obviously no, like there's no sense of that. Like, mm-hmm. No, we didn't leave the stove on. The fire's outside. And then my thought was, did we leave the gas grill on? No, we didn't. Like in those milliseconds, like was right. Gas grill.
So you're kind of like trying to figure out what the hell is going on here.
Yeah. Why would it start?
So that's kind of almost distracting your brain from like an imminent danger.
Right.
And things. So obviously, spoiler alert, you're still here, right? So we make it out of the house. What happens next when you're seeing your literal dream home, this home that you've searched for, this home that took you 6 months to go through escrow and everything, this home that you've had this incredible summer in with your family and the connection and the love and the memories that you made, and literally everything is burning to the ground?
Yeah.
What is happening at that point?
Right. So Dan had yelled for, you know, just get out of the house, get out of the house. And we had three dogs, and we grabbed the dogs, got out. Actually, when he yelled, our one dog went back upstairs. So Dan ran back up after her. And luckily she came to him, and he later told me that as he was yelling for her, he took a breath. And that's when, by then, the smoke had come in the house, and there was no more air to like grab another breath. So luckily we all got out. We went across the street to the neighbors. So, and we're in our nightgowns and our, you know, our underwear, and
yeah. You
know, here it is October and it's chilly. So luckily our neighbors across the street let us come into their house at 3:30 in the morning. And, we, you know, made a couple quick.
Let's back up here, because you've only been in the street, right, for 10 months. So have we met the neighbors at this point in time, or is this a bit more like, hello, we're complete freaking strangers, you know, in what is the relationship with these neighbors at this point in time?
Yeah, we really didn't know them. I think we had met them briefly at a 4th of July party that another neighbor had. So there really wasn't like, oh, we're friends. Like we had met.
Right. Like you've been inviting them over for drinks and you've been going to their house for barbecue and things like that. It was no type of relationship like that. And these amazing people take you in. It's 3 a.m. in the morning. Your dream house is burning to the ground. You've got your doggos. So thank goodness. And you know, what is going on now further?
Well, and I think in my mind, there was this idea that, yeah, there's a fire and the firemen are going to show up and put it out. They're going to show up and put it out. It's not going to burn the house. It's going to just be put out. And as I'm watching from the neighbor's window, there was this, and the firemen showed up, and I know they were working as fast as they could, but there was this, and, you know, thought in my mind of, hurry up, get go, like, and at some point I saw the flames coming through the front windows upstairs. And at that point, that's when it hit me. That was the moment of,
this is not going to be salvageable.
This isn't going to be good. Like, there goes our house. And I actually, in this world of technology, I took a picture. You know, I had my phone and I took a picture of it. And that was the moment of, we're deeper in this.
Sheer horror.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
One of the reasons we call it Tales from the Fire, I think it's like one of the reframes is we've worked through, and things that we've worked through, is that it brought such tremendous lessons that came through. I mean, I think one of the biggest ones was you really knew who your people were.
Absolutely. You know?
Because I think, well, you can tell the story of your best friend, because that was amazing. I just thought that was so incredible.
Right. So what happened was our Dan's brother lived not far from us. And so we went there for the day. Dan was back and forth. I was there most of the day. And let me back up. Our neighbors, who we really didn't know, gave us gave me some not well-fitting clothes to wear, and a pair of inexpensive flip-flops. So I was dressed in kind of these velour, you know, lounge pants and a, I don't know what shirt, and these flip-flops, and went off to my brother-in-law's house, and making phone calls and calling people. And one of my first calls, of course, was to my best friend who lives in California. And she was like, well, what can I do? What can I do? How can I help you? Should I come out? And in that moment, I was like, no, I don't know what you could possibly do. What would you do? And, you know, you don't know in those moments that, yes, really, you should say yes. But
isn't that a funny thing? Because we don't really, sometimes, even in our darkest hours, we've just lost our house. It's burnt to the ground. We're literally homeless at this point. And then we've got this amazing human being offering us help, and we still don't allow ourselves to take it.
Yeah. I was like, you know? Yes, I know that we really should.
It's so strange, isn't it? That even, you know, even though, especially as women, I think we just don't allow ourselves to be supported. Even in that situation of that darkest hour, we're like, no, I don't know what you would do. And at the same time, like, my life has fallen apart.
Yeah. And so as the day went on, we got set up in an extended stay hotel, and, you know, went to bed. We'd gone to the mall and got some essentials. And as I was falling asleep, or some point, you know, late that night, I got a text message from my friend that said, I'm going to be on the red eye. I'll be there at 7:30 in the morning. And yeah, I just love her. And thank goodness that, I mean, honestly, thank goodness, because, you know, looking back, and even a few months after that, I recognized the so much value in her doing that. And, you know, obviously, even in the days following that, there was so much value of her, you know, calling credit cards, helping me cancel things, organizing things, being able to laugh with her. Like, actually, we had moments at the hotel that were so ridiculous that we couldn't help but laugh. And thank goodness for all of that. And, you know, I'm so grateful to her for being there for me and organizing. You know, months later, when there were, when we were finding, you know, did we disconnect the electricity? You have to disconnect it at the source of the, you know, in the, at the curb, not in the house. Of course, it's gone in the house. And I'm looking back at notes that she had taken that, yes, we called and this happened. And, you know, notes with the cable company or whoever, the utilities that, yes, she had called these people and I wouldn't have remembered. I had to look back at her notes. So there were so many things that she took care of. And even at some point, a few days later, we, you know, as she stayed, I don't remember even how long she stayed, but a few days later, it was like, let's go get pedicures, you know, just to get a break from all of the stress of it.
Yeah.
And yeah, there, and maybe that sounds, you know, crazy to some people that we went and did that, but we did. And, you know, just finding our, trying to find our footing in those few days.
It's that adjustment really, because we, you know, there's no going back. Mm-hmm. And it's that, you know, it's that no going back. And then at the same time, it's like, we've got to come up with what is going to be a new normal. But in the meantime, in the interim, we've got to adapt to what currently is the new normal. Right. So there's all these, literally these balls in the air and we're juggling all of it. Right. And to have such a lovely friend to come and help you through that time, I mean, that's priceless, absolutely priceless.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And, you know, just the things that even in the hotel that I realized, we've got to get this right now. We've got to get set up. What are our essentials for this moment that we need? And then you add on from there. But having her there, yes, so was incredible.
From that day forth, your life really changed, right? But if we were to kind of like put a lovely ribbon on Tales of the Fire, a lot of things happened because of that, right? Because of that and things like that. So although, you know, you people who are maybe listening to this podcast are thinking, holy moly, this woman's house burnt to the ground. You know, how are you going to be okay? How do you keep smiling? How do you keep laughing after something like that? But, you know, out of the ashes literally rose a brand new life. Tell us a little bit about rising from the ashes, really.
Right. So there were so many things that, you know, we had during that time, we had started to visit Michigan, which is where my mom lives. And we're also, I had grown up in the summers coming and spending time in this little village in Michigan. And I was in love with it. And we had just started to visit it more. And that was one of my desires, was to try to find more time to spend in Michigan. So we were able to do that. What we decided in the months after the fire, we lived in a rental house. And we're looking for our own home again in New Jersey. But in the meantime, as we, you know, spent more and more time in Michigan, we also decided that we loved, you know, this town here, and we wanted to have our own home in Michigan. So we were able to do that. We were able to reestablish our household in New Jersey and then also establish a new household in Michigan. And I know that if we had been able to stay in the house that burned, I don't believe we would have been able to do those two things. We wouldn't have been able to combine both of it. It would have probably just still been a visiting situation and not as been able to go spend as much time as we currently do in Michigan.
And moving to Michigan has also led you to opening your art studio.
Right.
And it's also led to discovering a love of pottery.
Absolutely.
Right, which wasn't even on the agenda, wasn't even on the ticket before. And I think was it your rental house or what that created your children's book? What was the tiles? Where did they come from?
The tiles came from, so, right, I have my children's book, Susie Shower and Her Superpower. And when we, after we'd moved into the the house that burned, that's where the tiles were. I would go into the shower. It was the strangest thing, and see things like, you know, people see things in clouds. That's probably the most common thing that people talk about, is seeing things. Yeah. But I started seeing images in the tiles, and every day there would be a tile. Oh, that looks like a horse. That looks like a dog. That looks like a bear. That looks like a mermaid. And it was to the point where I felt like, how am I going to get these, like, to move on from this horse image? Like, how am I going to move on from this and get it out of my head? So I decided to draw it. And so I drew all these different images that I saw in the tiles. And a funny thing happened on the way to my life. I had no intention of writing a children's book. Somebody along the way, I had all these images, and somebody said, put it together in a children's book. And I was like, oh, okay. And so I did. So, but during the time in the rental house, that did come together. Like, the tiles obviously were gone at that point. The images were there. And that's when the writing and the putting it together started to come together. And then, and during that time as well, was when I started to draw other things. And those became images, first on greeting cards, and now there are images on mugs and pillows and
everything. Amazing. So it's almost like that house was just like this beginning catalyst of really awakening your inner artist, right? Yeah. And the house then burning from the ashes, we get this new life out in Michigan. We're doing part-time in New Jersey, we're going out to Michigan, and then that leads you into an artisan center out there, and you start building, you start building your love of pottery and more art and more things, and photography starting to get added into the mix and stuff, and it's really kind of like exponentially unfolding in front of you. Tell us about the journey of your studio a little bit as well, because that was really, really exciting when you decided, I want to have a space for me. I want to have a space to fully, fully explore this artistic side of me.
Right. And like you said, I had started to do pottery at the Artisan Center. I had a fabulous mentor there who worked with me, and just I fell in love with pottery and all of it and the creativity. So there was a point where I, like you said, I realized I want my own space to do this and to be able to have the time and the space to create more. And we didn't know what that was going to look like. And you were on this journey with me, thank goodness. And so we, looked at all kinds of different things. We looked at different buildings here in our town. We thought about just building a space, a space in the backyard where I could do it in my backyard. And we did make offers on a couple different buildings that didn't work out. And eventually we hit on the studio, the building that I have now. And as it turns out, again, spoiler alert, we aren't surprised that it really is the perfect space to have my pottery studio in the back and then retail space in the front. And I had done some photography, just backyard photography, even in our house before we moved to the house that burned, but of course took more photos there and in the rental house. And one of the first things that we replaced was my camera. I had really, honestly, the day before the house burned, we had a bedroom. Sometimes, you have a bedroom that's kind of a catch-all. And Dan kept saying, make that an art studio. Make that an art studio for yourself. And I had literally the day before said, okay, let's imagine what this will be. It needs a desk. I need a printer, like a high-quality printer. And I had, on that Sunday before, hours before the house burned, ordered a desk, ordered a printer, and was like, yes, we're going to go. We're going to do this.
Oh my God.
I didn't know what it was going to look like. I didn't know, but I knew I had these drawings and these photos that I needed a printer for, and I needed a desk to be able to work on my projects. And that arrived, you know, actually I had to call both of the companies that I ordered it for from and say, please deliver it here instead, because it was going to be delivered within days of the fire. You can't deliver it to my house. It's not there anymore.
It's not there. Oh my God.
So there was this inspiration in that house. But then, of course, these things, it's almost like,
if you think about the fire, in a way, it's almost like the house itself was a catalyst, right? For all of this great change and things like that. And really like alchemizing you basically and really igniting, pardon the pun, but your creativity. So we've got this place in Michigan, Studio 161, which I've had the exciting ringside seat to seeing it being birthed and realized from concept to actually being a studio that celebrated its first year going. You've also got healing space in there as well. So you've also you've also trained in different healing models as well and things. So let's talk a bit more about your work now. Because I think like most multi-passionate entrepreneurs, our work is born of our lives, really, in a way, right? And just as we've seen the story of how you really, the journey of you becoming an artist, really, there is a whole journey of you, you know, your artist, healer, and sage, and the sage part is really the coach, right? To be the coach. And tell us a little bit about, starting to kind of move yourself now into sharing so much of your wisdom that you've created over the years and things like that. Let's talk a little bit about, what is it that you do for women?
Well, in your, when you said ignite, my creativity, so creative spark is part of it. Like this creative spark that I think a lot of women carry in them, that they're looking for something in themselves to embrace. And sometimes it's a creative thing, but I think that through the course of being creative, you can also heal so many things, even if it's a one day workshop, which we have those at the studio, and the camaraderie of a workshop. But one of my programs that I've created is the Queen Code. And that is about boundaries and setting boundaries and personal policies. But I also feel there's a healing. I've worked with you, obviously. We've worked together for years and you're my mentor. And I have added to my tool bag energy healing abilities and
light web priestess abilities.
Yeah, light web priestess and the light web healings and Akashic record healings. And I have three journals that can help you move through some areas where you might be interested in the winds.
Yeah, these are really deep dive journals that help you to go really deep, like the light up your life journal, when you're needing more light, when you're needing, you've got to find, well, where is it that I'm, in the shade in my life and how can I move through that and stuff? They're amazing, your journals. Tell us a little bit about the Queen Code, because that has, without being too like personal, but that journey, I mean, that's a many decade journey. That's not a hey, we just popped on the scene and we're just going to do this thing that sounds super cool called the Queen Code. That's actually been, it's one of the things that I've always really admired about you, because obviously through working with you, I've gotten to know your stories and I've gotten to know you. And for me personally, my own personal experience of you is that, you know, I really, really admired that you've always had some form of what you've called a personal policy, right? And I really admired that because, you know, being a life coach myself and being somebody that's coached many people, you know, a lot of people are in a lot of trouble in life because they don't have any policies, right? Their boundaries are really weak. They're, you know, so I don't often, doesn't often come across that somebody comes into my world that already has very good boundaries in place. And things like that. So that was, you know, for me, that was a real joy to work with you in the fact that, you know, you were already, and it was from, and what really impressed me was that it was from quite a young age. So that's what I'm saying. It's like decades in the making, this Queen Code program. Tell us about, you know, a really poignant place in your life where you really realized you stepped up in the Queen Code for yourself.
Yeah, well, right after I graduated from high school, and I graduated a year early from high school, so I had a little bit of a transitional summer of,
so, you know. So what age would you have been at this time?
I was 17.
Okay.
And near the end of the summer, over the summer, I lived at that time with my dad and my stepmom, and the summer was a little bit challenging for different reasons. And one of them was that my stepmom's energy fluctuated a lot. Her personal policies fluctuated a lot. And there were some challenges over the summer. And it came to a head one night on a Sunday night. I had spent a lot of time, I was working over the summer. At one point, I had worked two jobs. And there had been a lot of back and forth about that and balancing that with my time that I spent with my friends. And I had been at my friend's house, my best friend at the time, that Sunday, and came home in the evening. And I don't know, there was a confrontation as I came through the door. And my stepmom had said to me, you know, you spend so much time over there. Why don't you just go live there? And that wasn't the first time I'd heard it over the summer. And I always had rolled my eyes at it and thought, well, that is such a silly thing to say. But at that night, I'd had it. I'd had enough of hearing it. And so I actually said, well, do you want me to leave tonight or in the morning? And there was no response. So I grabbed my car keys and my purse and I left. And thank goodness for my friend and her family. And I went back over there and sat on the couch and cried and didn't know what I was going to do. And they said, you're welcome. You're welcome here. And thank goodness again, that they were, and I stayed with them. And they took me in, and I was obviously, this is my best friend. I was very close to them already, but still there's a different situation to like, yeah, come and live with us. And be within our family. But looking back on that, I do realize that my stepmom had a lot of unhealed energy, unhealed parts of herself. And that is why her policies, her personal policies fluctuated. And it was a bit of a roller coaster ride with her. And I had just had enough. I didn't want to ride the ride anymore. I couldn't do it. I needed to.
I mean, because this isn't, you know, this, anybody listening to this might think this is like a stroppy teenager, you know, like, right, I'm out of here. And then you come back with your tail between your legs in a couple of days. But it wasn't like, this was your personal policy of like, I've had it. You know, I am not riding your roller coaster ride anymore. And of course, now in hindsight, we got the beautiful gift of hindsight. We can see how unhealed this woman was, how she had her own demons and her own battles that she was probably fighting every single day. We can actually probably see where she could have done with your program, the Queen Code, literally, right, to help herself and to keep herself on a more even keel in life. But instead, she was probably emotionally swinging on a pendulum massively as well. So you've going through all of this and you get to this point where you've just literally had it up to here and you've chosen, you've made, I feel very much even, you know, this is one of the things I really admire. At 17, I felt like you really made a very powerful conscious choice that that was not the standard that you wanted for your life anymore. That, you know, to live in, and I think anybody that's lived in, I think for a better word, an abusive home in a way, right? That because it was, you know, there was a lot of conflict with this woman, you know, there was a lot of unhealed stuff from her, which was quite often projected onto you. You know, and that to some point is, I think anybody who's lived in a kind of house like that, where it's very disruptive and you don't know what you're going to get. And even a simple action of coming home from, you know, having a really wonderful day at your friends and then coming home and then being met with hostility. I think anybody that's been kind of through that can how many people have realized how much strength that actually took to get out of something like that, because not only do you go through that, but it grates on you as well. Like, it pulls your vibration down, it pulls your energy down as well, it weakens you too, right? And for you to gather all of your strength at just 17 and make that move, and it was a permanent move.
It was a permanent move. I never went back and lived there. And it wasn't a one night snap decision. I mean, it was in the moment a immediate decision, but it had been building not only for the summer, but for years. And there was a lot around it. And I did feel, even, like I said, even over the summer, there was so much back and forth of, you know, you need to be doing this and you need to be doing that. And again, why aren't, you know, sometimes it was, why aren't you spending more time here at the house? And I was like, between my two jobs and my friends and all these things, I'm supposed to also now be here. And my thought process at that time was, for what reason? You know, what reason do I need to be spending more time?
To be yelled at, to be unappreciated, to be picked at, you know, like, who would blame anybody for not wanting to be in that situation? Right. But you created a standard for your life. And I think that very bold moment in your life set a standard going forward of what you, as you know, Laura, were going to put up with and not going to put up with in life. And I think from that, well, you can really, you know, let us know what came from that, really, what's kind of developed from that. Now here we are several years later, of what, how that kind of has transpired for you.
Right. And so there are things that, you know, you just are able to say, no, this isn't for me. We've created the Queen Code program, which is it's an online program, and I can work with people one-on-one. I can work with people in a small group setting online. But the idea is, when you look at stores or businesses, they have policies. This is how it came about to develop the program itself, was the idea that stores and businesses have policies. For example, they have a sign by the cash register, no exchanges, no returns. There's no question. It's right there. Like, if you come back and say, well, I'd like to exchange this, they point to their sign. No, when you bought this, no exchanges, no returns. Banks. I love to use banks as an example, because if you do not have an account at a bank and you go in and say, I'd like to cash this check, they're like, do you have an account with us? No, I don't have an account with you. Well, then I can't cash your check. So it's very clear, you know, and the person, you know, the teller at the bank, they're not going to wobble on that and say, well, let me just ask and see if we can. No, there's no wobble.
It's a really solid boundary.
Right.
And so, I mean, I remember this conversation of you saying, why can't humans have this? And I said, well, why can't they?
Right. And that's what it became. We worked together to create this program, and that's what it is. It just sets you up to not have the wobble of, and it's not that you can't make a decision for yourself. You can. If you have a personal policy in place that you want to give some leeway to, that you maybe say in certain situations, I'm not going to do that, but then something comes up and you say, well, no, in this case, I will change that. But there's no wobble. And once you set your personal policies, what happens is other people also realize, oh no, she's not going to do that. I've noticed her, you know, 5 times say no to that. So they're going to just start to respect it, start to know that you're not going to change that. You're not going to have a wobble, and they're not going to push your buttons on it anymore. They're not going to be able
challenged
to
on it. I think a lot of people have their boundaries challenged because their boundaries are so wishy-washy, you know, and having that policy in place of like, absolutely, we do not do that. It's our policy. We just don't do that. But, you know, obviously for a business, it helps to create really strong businesses with beautiful boundaries, which we're all about here in my world. But, you know, as a woman, we need strong boundaries for daily life, right? Because otherwise, you know, it's that the kind of saying, you know, like, give an inch and they take a mile, right? And it's like, how many women are feeling aggrieved in their daily lives because they've got loads of people taking a mile when all they wanted to do was give an inch, but it wasn't obvious that all they wanted to do was give an inch. And I think that's, you know, that's the sort of crux of what you've created here. And you've created this like amazing process. Tell us a little bit about the archetypes, because this bit was, when you came up with this, I remember thinking, oh my God, this is like actual liquid gold. This is genius. So there's characters in a queendom, because it's called the Queen Code, and we are about designing the queendom, right? So what characters can we find inside a queendom?
Right. So that's the thing, is that it is your queendom. It's your world. And you are the queen of your world. You're the reigning queen of your world. Hopefully, you know, you as the queen can stand in your power. And that's what the policies are about. But as we see in a queendom, there are supporting roles. There are the peasants who are the foundation of, you know, the farmers and the workers that can, you know, create the crops, grow the crops, do these things. But and then there's the knights, there's the servants in the castle, there's the princesses. So all these things are supporting roles of the queen. And you as the queen may be telling a story that you're not really in your power as the queen. You might be identifying with the peasant but these roles are so important. And when they are in alignment, they're beautiful supporting roles. When they're out of alignment, they make a mess of the queendom. And, you know, as the farmer, the peasant, or the worker, you can be happy in that role. You can be totally satisfied in that.
Absolutely. Role. I mean, they're living the good life. They're, you know, in that, it's the simple things in life that's giving them the joy, you know, for instance. But equally, we can all identify, we've been doing our work, because the peasant really represents the area of us that's working, right? Like doing the work. But it's equally so easy to tell like a really poor little me story, isn't it? Like, oh, I'm so hard done by, I'm the only one that's working around here, especially like women in housework, right? You've got an entire family and nobody lifts a finger. You know, and immediately you can be in an out of alignment peasant because you're the only one, you're the only worker in the entire queendom, right? And you're out having to do everything. You work a full-time job, you're having to clean, tidy after you feed several humans, things like that, right? So of course, like you start to, you're not ruling. You're in the fields at the cliff face, chipping away and feeling so resentful.
Absolutely. You know?
And this is why I love the, you know, the archetypes that you came up with, because as you were explaining them to me and we were, you know, we were coming up with this concept, I could see how I could see myself in every archetype. I could see where I had been that disgruntled worker. I could see where I'd been that princess and chucked my crown off and being like thrown a hissy fit. And, you know, and it's like a real diva strop with a princess, right? Equally, I could see that servant so clearly of when you're in that divine service that's so beautiful, so aligned, but equally you can be in servitude where you feel like you're everybody's dog's body and things.
Right. And in the night, the night.
Well, they're an interesting crew, right? Because there's more than one night.
There's more than one night. And I can see, I see it play out so many times that, you know, one of the nights is the knight in shining. I'm going to save everyone. No, I'm there to save you. Don't worry. I'll be there to catch you. And what's good for me is good for you. And there, yeah. And then the other important archetype is the priestess, the high priestess, right? Which is your inner voice, your intuition, your higher self, and you want to connect with her as well. It's really important to be in your energy. So there, all
she
these
are like advisor of the queen, doesn't she?
Yeah, she's the queen's best advisor, the inner advisor of the queendom, and helps her to stay in her balance and stay in her queendom. But all of these things play into it in such an integral way, and they're all so important, and how we identify with them, and hopefully, you know, to find a way to, it's okay to accept them to a certain level, but there's also a certain, you need to move past some of it and not sit in the muck and the mud of poor me, like you said, poor me, I have to do everything. No, we've got to move out of that story. And they are stories. They are stories that we tell ourselves, and they keep us stuck in the muck.
Absolutely. And I mean, like going back to your journey of where I feel like this almost just originated from that 17-year-old self that picks herself up and says no more to a queen that's literally not in her power. Obviously, you know, in the family dynamic, you were one of the princesses of that household, and you were like, well, I'm going to have to set up a queendom of my own now, because I cannot stand this queen that's never in her power. So, you know, one minute she's like, you know, it's like that. I always get that vision of the Alice in Wonderland, like off with her heads, you know, that's a queen outside her power, you know, and you decide, well, I've had enough living with somebody like this, because it's, you know, it was just bringing you down all the time, and it was starting to really, really affect you. And being strong enough in that moment to claim a queendom for yourself at 17, I think that's just extraordinary. And now what's exciting is you get to do that for other people. You get to take them on that journey of really taking control of their lives, because, you know, one of the other things that's, I feel, has always, you know, very much on our journey that we've had together, is this thing that you've always been, it's been very dear to your heart, of like personal responsibility, you know, and really taking personal responsibility for oneself, as opposed to, and we can see how you took personal responsibility for yourself at quite a young age. But how, you know, so many of us are like, we're loved to blame it outside of ourselves. right? It's the economy. It's, right now it's that wonderful pandemic, isn't it? That's like everybody's kind of go-to thing at the moment. But it's like, never mind that you've been shoving donuts in your face for years and your immune system shot to hell, like no personal responsibility there whatsoever. It's because it's a dangerous world out there. And it's like, well, yeah, it is a dangerous world out there, but you're like, you didn't do yourself any favors on the inside of like, what did you take personal responsibility for to look after yourself? Tell us a bit about your journey of personal responsibility, because that's been, I feel like for you a little bit, that's been hard won and fought, if you like, you know, that you've had to always really kind of, it's not always the most pleasant thing in the world, shall we say, of taking personal responsibility, because sometimes you feel like you get the raw end of the stick.
Right. And that's the thing. There's so many people I do witness, and a lot of people just aren't willing to take responsibility for themselves. But even if we go back to my high school, Laura, and I, you know, there were times when I thought, you know, I don't want to be here in this household, and I could run away. Couldn't I run away? Wouldn't that be fabulous? But even at that age, I was like, no, because I'm not in a position to be able to leave and stay away, right? I'll come back, and then that will be worse. It will be worse if you come back after running away. Things will not be fun. So, you know, that to me, on a level, is a personal responsibility. I think I knew that I wanted to get out of the household sooner than later, so I figured out how to graduate early. I didn't know that this opportunity was going to come up to leave the house that day, to have this challenge to leave. But also, if you think about, even let's go back to the tales from the fire. After our house burned, I think there were a lot of people that were surprised at our response to that, because we didn't sit in this crybaby, you know, our house burned down and now what are we going to do? And this is my husband as well. It's not just me. We together moved forward and moved forward and moved forward every day. And I think a lot of people were surprised by that it didn't crush us. It didn't crush our lives. We moved forward and moved on. But also, there are so many times when, you know, you have these challenges of that you had to meet, of saying no to people or saying, no, I'm going to stand in this power and, you know, I'm not going to accept this, whether it's in a business relationship or a friendship or family. When you stand up and say, this is a family member that I don't choose to have a relationship with. And then the rest of the family is coming at you, but they're family. And I just don't feel that, you know, the chance of DNA.
That's a big thing for people, isn't it? I mean, like, that's why people stay in such toxic relationships with family members that are literally toxic for them, is that, but it's family. Well, never mind that every time you see them, they completely and utterly tank your mental health. At some point, you've got to take personal responsibility for that. In my world, we call it the hot ovens, right? If you put your hand on a hot oven, you burn your hand. Logic dictates, take your hands off the hot oven, right? It stops burning. But we don't realize that our emotional relationships to other people, it can be like hot ovens. But we continue to, we practically install ourselves in the oven, right? And then wonder why we get burnt all the way around instead, like a nice, even, crispy glow. Because that person is so toxic for us, instead of, you know, realizing, taking personal responsibility and saying, actually, this person is not good for my mental health. And I don't like who I am when I'm around them. So I'm choosing myself to move away from this, despite the fact that they're family. I think that's a biggie for people, is, you know, because the whole thing, isn't it? It's, oh, but they're family, oh, but they're family. And in a way, that's the opposite of personal responsibility, because personal responsibility is the responsibility that you have to yourself.
Absolutely. And even with friendships, I've had friendships where, you know, you stay in them because you did have a great connection and you do have fun. And then as it transpires, you realize, well, wait a minute, maybe this is a little more one-sided than I'd like, but we're still friends. We've been friends for so long and we're friends. And what kind of a friend will I be if I'm not friends with them anymore? If I choose to, you know, back off from them, but if it's somebody who makes you feel icky every time, or more times than not, then what are we doing? Or people who, you know, point the, you know, we do like to blame everything else but us for what is going on in our lives. And this is personal responsibility. And I really, you know, I have very low tolerance for the crybaby, you know, poor me, you know, look at what everybody's doing to me or what the world is doing to me. And it's, we have our choices. We have our choices every minute, every day, every week, you know, we make our choices.
I think that's a real byproduct of having such a high standard of self-responsibility, of being willing to take responsibility for oneself, has set quite a low level tolerance for people who on one level are absolutely in love with their excuses, you know, and they love them more than they would love to be empowered in the situation, because they keep clinging to the excuses of why life looks a certain way, or why they can't get ahead in life, or why they can't make it work, or why their relationships always seem to come along and bite them in the bum, and all of these things, you know. And I think, you know, this has been a real, I feel like for you, like as much as I know about your journey, a lot of it has been born out of literally a funny thing happened on the way to my life, right? Because your life in a way have been a series of unexpected plot twists.
Right. And this is the thing, as we're talking, I'm thinking, you know, this is what at one point in what it was, it why I created A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life, was that as I look back, you see that life changes and there's plot twists and there's really great things and then there's really crappy things. And how do you manage those things? Do you look at it and sit and then and let that, you know, just devastate your life? Or do you go, okay, that happened.
A funny thing happened on the way to my life, literally.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a mantra in a way. It's a mantra to be able to say, a funny thing happened on the way to my life. You know, it wasn't in the plan, but I'm rolling with it. I'm going to see, you know, I'm going to get to the other side of this. I'm going to roll with this. I'm going to see to the other side.
Right. And that's the thing for my life. And then what I realized is that a lot of other people, most everyone else, has a funny thing happen on the way to my life. And what I love about the stories that are on my podcast, my guests, the stories that they have, is that how they have maneuvered those and even overcome or created incredible things that they didn't expect would come from there. A funny thing happened on the way to my life, and how incredible these stories are and inspirational, and everybody has a different one. And it's amazing. And I know you have incredible.
Several funny things happened on the way to my life. That was so not in the plan. And yet, on the other, once, you know, when you're in the thick of it, it is awful quite often. But once you get to the other side of it, you realize how necessary something like that was for your life in order to change it onto the trajectory that you're on now. And especially when you get shifted into a trajectory of life that you become utterly in love with or obsessed with, that you're like, oh my God, I'm so happy for my life right now. I wouldn't be where I am in my world if there hadn't been a massive series of A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life.
Well, and just shameless plug, you are my first guest on, if you want to listen to episode one, you can hear Joanna's, one of her incredible stories. But this is the thing as well, is that some of the things are big, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life experiences. Some of them, as even as I think back on my life, I didn't even, you know, I do think of the bigger things, the ups, the big ups and the big downs, but even more common things like moving from one town to another, you know, when I was a child and we moved, that changes things. And you don't realize, of course, that changes everything, moving, you know, to a new town or your parents getting divorced or just all these things. And the good that comes out of it, the changes that can come out of it, if you are willing to go there, you know, and go with it and create something new out of it.
Totally. I think that's a beautiful place to wrap up on. I have loved sharing Laura with all of her listeners today. And I hope that you have really, really enjoyed this episode with my takeover. And I would love it if you just took a moment to give Laura a review on her podcast and tell us what was one of your favorite bits from today's episode and just pop it into the comments. We would absolutely love that. Thank you so much, Laura, for allowing me to take over your podcast. I'm Joanna Hunter of joannahunter.com. And my beautiful guest today was the hostess, the normal hostess of this podcast, Laura Muirhead, artist, healer, and sage of lauramuirhead.com.
Well, thank you so much, Joanna. I am so grateful for you and this takeover. I really enjoyed it. It's so much fun. Thank you so much. And thank you to our listeners.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for listening to A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to My Life podcast. For more information, visit my website at www.lauramuirhead.com.